Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daly.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you.
Hello, all of you. It's part two of Scott Gemmell and the Big Interview. I'm Graham. Part one was all about the men who helped make Scott. His father, Archie, yes, the guy who scored that famous 1978 World Cup goal, and the mighty Brian Clough, a man of very mixed personality, whose decline in later life was directly opposed to his brilliance throughout the majority of his life and career. Scott spoke about how he would never have had the time to develop without that famous surname, the Gemmell surname. But the decisions he's made have all been his. They've been distinct. And I can't think of many footballers who have put quite as much thought into the shape of their career after the time comes to stop playing. He did extraordinary things. For Scott, that involved rest and relaxation, a sabbatical, as we all do, in New York City. How about that? Before Pep Guardiola made such things de rigueur, yeah, he went to New York for a chill-out time too. And then Scott had an even longer stop, and you're going to hear this now, in my current hometown of Barcelona, where he spent time observing the training methods around Espanyol, as well as at the new training ground for Barcelona out by the airport. This is a man who, when he has an idea, he gets on with it and does it and betters himself. These preparations have formed the way that Scott coaches with the setup of the Scotland national team, where he has influenced the majority of the footballers who now make up Steve Clarke's first 11 and the rest of his squad. Scott is actually in charge of the under-21s, and he's been a major influence in the career of the exciting, talented group, which currently start to make it look as if Scotland will qualify repeatedly for tournaments. I'm fascinated to see where his talent will take him next, but for the moment, I'll hand over to Scott Gemmell to describe his own development and how he sees football. You'll enjoy this. So Barcelona was very different. You know, again, maybe people know, I don't know if they do or not, but when I met you, you explained to me that again. It wasn't a whim, but it was unpaid. It was completely of your own volition. And the principal idea was to develop, to see things that, again, with the humility that you talked about, I think, right at the beginning of the interview, I said to you at the time, I was pretty sure that given your career, never mind your dad, given your career and your authenticity of desire to learn, that Barcelona might have been helpful to you. So you need to explain to the listener what the concept about moving to Barcelona was and also what it was like.
Yeah, I think it would be easy for somebody to see my transition from player to coach and think that there was a plan. I have to be honest and say there wasn't, and that I was full of regret. I knew retirement was coming, of course, like everybody does, but I hadn't prepared for it well enough. And there are reasons for that. Again, I'm honest enough to say that transition, I questioned whether I had the personality to be a head coach. But I was wrong to think that, because what I needed was coach education. I needed to learn how to be. I had the football knowledge, of course, but I didn't have the leadership and management skills, and that's what I got through coach education. And you know, I absolutely transformed me the way I that I could apply that to football and take things from business and apply it to football in terms of leadership, management, influencing people, emotional intelligence. I loved all that, and that really gave me the belief that I could be a head coach and have and be successful. And I'm still trying to improve and do that every day. Going back to your point regarding Barcelona, the first big decision I made, and it was, again, with no plan, it was just a feeling, was to move to Glasgow. I was born in Scotland, but raised in England. I loved Glasgow and Scotland, and I had an opportunity to say to Ruth, my wife, let's go and live in Glasgow. I need to go to the games, the youth team games, the reserve games, the first team games. Something was just telling me I needed to go and see the football and see if I could picture my... I'm very fussy where I can see myself working. Mm-hmm. I understand I'm very lucky that some people can't do that. There's a need to go and just... They just need to get on with it and pay the bills. I understand at that period of my life, I was very fortunate that I could pick and choose. But something just told me to go to Glasgow. I'd done my A licence with the Scottish FA down at Largs, like hundreds of thousands of other people. And we literally moved to Glasgow on the Thursday. And on the Saturday, as my plan was, I picked a youth team game to go to. And I picked a St Mirren home game at a place called St Anthony's, literally just on the outskirts of Glasgow as you're heading towards Paisley. And the first person that I bumped into was Billy Stock, who was my assessor on the A licence.
At Largs. Mighty dandy as well. Thanks, Billy.
And he obviously, thankfully, he recognised me and kind of was surprised to see me. He said, what are you doing? I was honest. I said, I've just moved with my wife. We've rented an apartment in the West End. I'm going to go and watch all the games, youth team, reserves. I need to just see what's happening. And Billy unbelievably said, I'm going to Hungary with the under-17s next week. Why don't you come with us? Now,
so
it was just an incredible moment and opportunity. As it turns out, I didn't go because my disclosure didn't come through. You have to be disclosed to travel with the youth teams. Luckily for me, they had another trip 4 weeks later. The disclosure was through and I started to work with Billy. No, I wasn't getting paid. Billy was incredible with me in terms of giving me that opportunity just to be there, to see it, to experience it, to find my feet, to not be out my comfort zone. I got the opportunity through Billy again to go onto the pro license with the Scottish FA. During that period, I'd already been in Scotland for about a year, going to games. I was helping Billy with the under-17s. I was going to watch, for example, if Scotland's under-17s or under-19s got drew against Croatia, I would go to Zagreb and do a report for Billy on the under-19s. I wasn't getting paid for it. I was doing that myself. But I was happy to do it because I knew it was developing me, giving me that experience, testing me. Billy was very grateful, but I think he was a little bit embarrassed that he couldn't pay me. But I didn't want him to feel like that. But anyway, Billy ended up helping me get on the pro license almost as a thank you for helping him do things like that. But when I started to go on the pro license, I knew I needed to do more. I was learning so much about leadership and management. I started to have the belief and the hunger more and more. So Ruth and I said to Ruth, I want to go to Barcelona. Let's just go to Barcelona. I'm not quite sure why, how. Let's just do it. And I used to just go to watch Barcelona B team train every day in the morning, as you know where it is, get the tram to the end of the line, walk down to the training ground. And I should add, I didn't have access to the training ground at this point. You could at night. You could just sneak in and
when
watch.
When the families and the kids come in.
And at weekends, you could sneak in to watch games. Mm-hmm. But I never got to see the first team train because that was obviously private and enclosed.
Was that Luis Enrique or Tito?
Luis Enrique and Tito as well, a period. But the B team was Eusebio.
Yeah, Sacristán.
Sacristán. But I could see the B team train from the edge, from the perimeter. You know, it wasn't enclosed. So I stood and watched B team train every day. And there were sometimes I would go and obviously they wouldn't be training. A lot of the time, as you know, you can go into the local papers and even with my rubbish Spanish, I could work out the training schedule. And then I would go back. I would go down to behind the Camp Nou to the mini stadium and watch the activity for the younger age groups after school, which again I found unbelievable, that just seeing that insight.
It was just so behind the mini stadium, there's those elevated pictures where Messi began, really.
Yep. Yeah. And just watching how they train the young players. And then I would go to watch the B team at the weekend and the youth teams at the different age levels at the weekend as well. I also got access to Espanyol, which was amazing, because obviously Rizzo Pochettino was the manager. That again was incredible. For part of your pro license, you have to do a club visit as part of the criteria. Because I was living in Barcelona, I thought, I'm just going to chance it with Espanyol. Mm. And I guessed the sporting director, Ramon Planes's email address. And
you guessed it?
I guessed it. I went onto the club website and saw that all the email addresses ended in the same way. So I just guessed. I think it was.
I like that.
And I used Google Translate to say, my name's Scott. I'm helping with the Scotland, whatever, under 17s, under 19s. I'm doing my pro license. I'm living in Barcelona. Can I come and do my club visit Espanyol? He emailed me back the next day, said, come in. Wow. It was incredible.
This is the Ramon Planes who has just left Barcelona. He's a candidate for the Newcastle DOF job. This is the Ramon Planes who ensured that Barcelona got Pedri from Las Palmas.
Yeah.
And was quickest to see him, was the most persuasive about the deal, and therefore whose name is going to carry weight in Spanish football circles forever and ever.
He was amazing. He introduced me to one of his staff. And normally, if you do a club visit for the pro license, it's possibly 2, 3, 4 days. Because I lived in Barcelona, they just gave me access to go to the club as much as I wanted, which was an incredible gesture. And I got to see, of course, the academy, the first team. And something else I found really interesting was obviously during that period, Pochettino went to Southampton. And the first thing he did, if you can remember, was he brought Southampton to Barcelona and they trained at the Olympic Stadium.
Up in Montjuic, yeah.
And I saw all those sessions. I was that guy. I couldn't get in. I got chased out. I remember biking down to the Olympic Stadium on my bike.
Wait. Biking down. There's an up bit as well, because it's on a hill. So you can say biking down if you want. But
no, but I was listening to my music on my Walkman, so that was fine. But that was a real big moment.
So where did you stand? At the little arch at the far end where you can see in?
Yeah, I did. But it was a real big moment for me because I knew it was a key moment for the new manager. Well, obviously, he's got his new team in the Premier League. He's taken them to Barcelona. I wanted to see those sessions because I knew he was going to really try to show and influence the, because he's obviously preparing for the game the next week and he needs to quickly get across how he wants the team to play. And I knew they were going to be really key sessions. And I saw them and I was so pleased that I saw them because it just gave me real confidence and belief because he was working in a way that I would have predicted and that I would have worked to. And that really just, again, fueled me in terms of motivation and
I'm at that level, even ambition. If I'm not doing it yet, that just, I've got the same...
I just knew that I was on the doing the right things and that there's so much, obviously, that goes into the pot to influence players and to get results, but I knew that I was working in the right way. And that again, was a real... something that really has stayed with me, that particular period. But Barcelona and going was an unbelievable decision. I understand not everybody can do it. I'm lucky that I could do it financially. It was also before I had children. Everything fitted into place. It was not planned, but it was a big insight. And, you know, not just from everything in terms of how Barcelona influenced the young players, that how they construct the sessions, how they deliver their sessions. Same for the B team, game-related practices, you know, even though I couldn't hear everything the coach was saying or understand everything the coach was saying, I could see the game-related practices and the objectives of the sessions and just really seeing that. And then the bigger thing regarding the culture and the environment and the demand and factoring in, obviously, sports science into the session. Things that I hadn't experienced as a player. Mm-hmm. It was a whole new level.
Did Antonio know you were an ex-footballer?
I think I did tell him eventually. He must have thought I was stranger than most people think I am, actually, because, you know, where I was disappearing to every morning and coming right. back. And yeah, I did tell him eventually, but it didn't seem to impress him very much. And then I've obviously been back since and been gone to say hello to him, and he knows I coach the under-21s and he's not easily impressed.
You see, you were lucky to be in that situation without kids, because when we moved to Barcelona, Steve Archibald recommended that we go to Kensington School, which is up near Pedralbes but a little bit further up towards kind of higher up. And we went there, and because I was a freelance, I was nicking about of the morning, and I'd drop Cara, my oldest daughter, off, and you know, if she ever had to come home at lunchtime, I'd easily pick her up, and I'd be there to pick her up at 4 o'clock, and the parents would sort of ask, and then the teachers would ask, like, what does your dad do? And Cara said, well, nothing really. She would stay all for a good chunk, thought I was some sort of criminal on the... you know, on the lam a little bit. And they genuinely, the word spread, I mean, in some aspects they weren't far wrong, but in the way that they thought it wasn't right. Because if you're in Barcelona and you're sort of dadding about in shorts and a baseball cap or whatever, people will draw their conclusions. So maybe Antonio initially drew similar conclusions, I don't know. Viva Pedralbes.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We'll be right back.
I want to draw to a climax by telling you, as I told you before, that we've got these people, we call socios, because your time in Spanish football, you'll remember that socios are the ones that are members of the club. So our socios have been with us right since we began. We've got two questions in, one from David Henry. Hi, Graham. I'd like to ask Scott if the current crop of senior Scotland players is down to changes in development that we've all spoken about for years, or just a bit of chance that they've all come through within a short space of time together, and also if there's any players not currently in the setup that have half a chance of breaking through. Then Andrew Anderson asked, hi Graham, surely you have to ask Scott about train spotting? No, Andrew, I'm not going to. More seriously, although there was good music in that film.
There was.
More seriously, I'd been interested in his views on the development of young players in Scotland. My nephew was in the books of Hibs from ages 10 to 15, and I saw him playing against Billy Gilmore. Rangers, to their credit, had two wee ball-playing midfielders at the time, but they were very much the exception. Most teams seemed to prioritise size over technique. I was not generally impressed with what I saw, the level of coaching. I asked Scott what one or two things would make the biggest impact in terms of improvement at youth level. Thanks, Andrew Anderson from Edinburgh. With the time that we've got remaining, I don't think you can get to all of that, but I would like to know two specific things. I think, and I think this is more than jungle drums beating an urban myth, I think that you've been inspired by Billy Gilmore, and I think you've helped shape some of what we're seeing in Billy Gilmore, because you've had him as a pupil at a couple of different levels. And the general point about development, like, for example, I've got an amazing stat here about the Holland must hate you. I can imagine you're going to get a job in Eredivisie, because if you look at your record against Holland, you've tormented them. But on the subject of development, Tuesday 5th December 2017, Scotland 2, Netherlands 0. Fulton Suter, Ralston, Taylor, McKenna, Wilson, Thomas, Morgan, Malin, Cadden, Burke, plus subs, manager Scott Gemmell. Holland are Drommel, Van Drongelen, Jerry St. Just, Ovejan, Denzel Dumfries, Goose Till, Pablo Rosario, Bart Ramasalar, Frankie de Jong, Steven Bergvine, and further down, Usama Idrissi, who spent a lot of time at Sevilla. I look at that Netherlands side from 2017, you beat, and you've beaten that Netherlands group again, 2-1. They've got these players I've read out now have got 197 UEFA appearances, Europa League, Conference less so, and Champions League between them. Your group has got 64 in the subsequent, September 2017, 4 years. So something really dramatic has happened in terms of your group's exposure to elite European football and the Dutch groups, and Frankie de Jong's a 90 million euro player. So, one, Billy Gilmore. Two, the development of Scottish young talent.
Yeah, I think Billy, the one thing we did for him was give him the opportunity. I think a big thing, and I'm sure Billy has spoken about it in some interviews, we took him to the Toulon tournament really ahead of schedule by most people's standards, not by his. He obviously put himself in that position where it was an easy decision to take him. But that was a big thing for him to go and play at that level ahead of schedule. But what he did was he confirmed his talent at that tournament, which I think is what the player needs to do. So I think the Billy one is what we gave him was the opportunity. Obviously, in terms of the development, that is the club and the player without doubt, and everything that goes into the mix there, even off the pitch with his family and his agent and stuff, you know, everybody deserves credit there. But what we did as an association was give him that opportunity to go and confirm his talent at a higher level. And I can remember, I think I'm 90% sure that was the Toulon tournament where Frank Lampard was sitting watching the tournament. I think he was there with the English FA doing his pro licence. So hopefully that opportunity at that level really helped Billy in that regard, just to really confirm his talent.
He was ahead of schedule in terms of the age profile of somebody who'd been taken to the Toulon tournament. What age gap might there have been? Would he have been 16?
I think he was 16, possibly 17, and the tournament was an under-23 tournament, because historically Toulon was 21s, but now, because of the worldwide teams from the other side of the world are preparing Olympic teams, so it's
meant to feed into that preparation.
So they expanded it to 23.
So there could have been a very significant age gap between him and the majority, if not all, of his opponents.
Yeah.
But also, would he have shared some of the difficulties you did about slenderness and size in terms of you'd advanced him, which is the great Ajax Cruyff way over the years, put them out of their security zone, and he wouldn't necessarily have been, talent-wise, yes, but physically?
Yeah, physically he was possibly at a disadvantage, but his speed of thought and his brain and his mentality were unquestionably ahead of you know, there's no comparison in that regards. His belief and ambition to become one of the best players, if not the best player in the world, he will tell you that himself. And
that's a set ambition.
Yeah.
Good. We don't do that as a nation.
Yeah, I agree.
That's not a particularly Scottish trait.
It's not.
We think we're born the best in the world, but we don't actually make any effort to try and go and get there, right?
No, it's usually knocked out of you.
yeah. And so you're looking at what you... When you take him to Toulon, what are you looking for in his personality as well as how he plays?
Yeah, you want to see that he can handle it, that he doesn't get too high when he does well, which he did. And also, I don't think he played the first game. He probably, knowing Billy, would have been expecting to play the first game. And also, is to give him that experience of tournament football. You know, I think I'm right in saying Billy's obviously just had a successful Euros in the summer there.
Yeah.
And he used Toulon as a reference. You know, it's proper tournament football with an extended period. Of course, staying in nice hotels and everything's the best of the best. But it is still a big thing to deal with. I think the Toulon tournament was over 20 days. And not just the group games, obviously, then going on to play the knockout phase as well. So it's real invaluable experience, and playing against the very best, not just in Europe, but players from Asia and South America as well.
What, dealing with boredom or finding things to do with your day when you're not training or in video sessions, concentrating, preparing yourself mentally for the next task if you do or don't know much about your opponent group, these sort of things, or what?
Yeah, the off the field things, just in that ability to rest and then train at the correct speeds. A lot of players really struggle to, you know, to actually shut down and rest and then switch on. And you know, maybe you're not training at the normal time you train with your club. And obviously then the ability to actually play with intent and how the team's been prepared to play. You know, it might be different from what the player wants or what the player's used to at his club. There's different objectives, different details tactically within the game. And then just being able to really handle the whole experience and also the scrutiny that comes with that for somebody like Billy.
I looked at a game he played for you, which was in November 2020, and he sent off against Croatia in a 2-2 draw where you come back from 2-0 down to 2-2, and that means he misses the next game, which you lose, and that's the game
where we could have qualified. Yeah.
Did you have a chat with him about that? Did it make a difference that he wasn't there?
Of course it made a difference. And Billy was harshly red carded in, you know, I believe what Billy said. He did swear, but he didn't swear directly at the referee. He was frustrated with himself. He knew he'd committed a foul, but you know, speaking about his size, he was being physical and trying to be strong because he was playing against the bigger opponent, and he was the one who was dominating a bigger opponent because he had the right mentality. And the referee gave a free kick, and he swore, but it was in frustration at himself. not directly at the referee, but the director.
These are further learning experiences.
Exactly, but yeah.
As much as you'd elect him there as a coach in Greece, he's sitting there going, I should be out there.
Yeah.
Unfairly treated, but there's also a lot of that over your career, isn't there?
And the difference between referees at UEFA level, which obviously will be good for him now, that he's playing with the senior team.
On the subject of development, it's tough in a short resume, but what would help Scotland's development of the talent that are coming through now? Because there seems to have been a change in the type of player again, whereby more and more there are footballers who either have watched continental football on television, which we didn't have the chance to do much, or who've been taught by coaches who might have some either experience of continental football or maybe have had experience of working with high-level continental coaches or whatever in England and then brought it back to Scotland. Whatever it is, there's a change in the flow and types of footballers that are playing professionally in the Premier League, maybe in the First League down, and playing for you. And also, it feels like quite a lot more young Scots are going and playing in France and in Italy, and you've picked up one particularly Athletic Bilbao, who's a Spaniard really, but Scottish by race and so on. What would if you could do that, what two or three things would most help that developmental flow?
In my opinion, the games programme has to be improved. The academy programme goes up to 18, and then there is a gap from 18 to 21 or 18 to first team, and the games programme is not good enough. So the most crucial part of the player's development, they're playing less games than they were at the age of 14, 15, 16, 17 and 18. And so that needs to be addressed. B teams obviously is very popular in Europe, in Spain, as you know.
Very.
And it's just absolutely established pathway and games programme for the very best players at the top clubs to go through that way. And I think there is resistance to that in Scotland.
Yeah. I don't understand that, I have to say.
But there's no doubt, in my opinion, that system does work. And if there is a resistance to have the B teams in Scotland, then there needs to be a different...
Find a way around the actual objections, but meet the same objectives.
Yeah, and whether that's with a different... Is it raising the under-18 league and raising it to under-19? The gap between is too big, and there's so many players that are training with the first team but not playing with the first team, the in-betweeners, and they're actually not playing enough football. So that the games programme, and you could also apply that with the national youth teams as well. The national youth teams need to play more games, need to play in more tournaments. We had to... after 2 years of doing well at Toulon, we had to decline our invitation to Toulon because we couldn't afford to go, sadly. The moment we declined our invitation, the Republic of Ireland replaced us at Toulon. That shows that the Republic of Ireland have got bigger investment, bigger budget. So that is something, again, that the Scottish FA really need to be careful of. But going back to the club scenario with the development of their players, there definitely has to be a revision of the games programme and that gap between finishing the academy and getting into the first team. And whether it's different rules for loan players and strategic loans, I think a lot of the clubs in Scotland outside of the top four or five teams, where I understand there's a real pressure and expectation from the fan base to win games and win trophies, I personally think a lot of the other clubs should have a more specific business model where they can use the development of young players to make money.
To help them financially.
Because they are the clubs that can say, do you know what? Okay, we might not win as many games as we want this season, but I tell you what we're going to do. These young players are going to stay in the team because they've got a proper objective and business model where they know after 1 year or 2 years, these young players will have 50 games, 100 games, and all of a sudden their pedigree and CV will be sellable. And I think a lot of the clubs are really missing a trick, just in terms of their focus and adjusting and their objective into and turning that opportunity that they've got to give the opportunity and actually make it into a business model.
It's a really clear and practical answer, which is something that is at a premium in football, where most people obfuscate and then don't tell the truth. Scott, that's been an hour and a half well spent. It's been a life and a career well spent. I'd really like the next time that we do this, because I'd like to repeat it, when you're in charge of Scotland's national team, PSV Eindhoven,
yeah.
I don't know, Derby County riding high in the in the Premier League, whichever it might be, because as much as I'm glad that Scotland's under 21 games are in your hands at the moment, they're in good hands, I see bigger things coming, and I'm excited about that. This has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for being a guest on The Big Interview.
I've enjoyed it, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Here endeth the lesson.